This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. There will be a new representative next year in Michigan's 63rd State House District. That includes parts of Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. House Speaker Jace Bulger currently represents that district, but he's not able to run again because of term limits. Kalamazoo County Commission Chairman Dave Maturin is the Republican nominee. Dave Maturin, thank you for being with us.
That's my pleasure.
Briefly tell the audience a little bit about your background and what you would like to do if you are elected to the State House.
Well, I'm in my third year as chairman of the Kalamazoo County Board of Commissioners. I've served 6 2-year terms so far, so 12 years on the county board, 14 years as a Brady Township trustee prior to that. Have some state and national experience. Governor Ringler appointed me to 3 2-year terms on the Board of Real Estate Appraisers. I chaired that, and I did spend 6 years on the Appraisal Foundation in Washington, D.C., essentially making all of the standards and qualifications for all the appraisers in the country. So I'm somewhat familiar with a little bit from Lansing and Washington, but I have a lot of local government experience. I'm a real estate appraiser by trade, been doing that for over 25 years. And prior to that, I worked for the State Treasury Department, Property Tax Division, euphemistically known as the State Tax Commission, supervising all of the equalization directors and assessors in Southwest Michigan. I do have a bachelor's degree in business administration from Western, and also a master's degree in public administration from Western. Just pretty proud of what we've done in the county board the last couple of years. We've been able to control our benefits costs and rein in our legacy costs. So I think we have county government on a sustainable keel to the point where future commissions shouldn't find a big fiscal cliff and then have to make a decision about raising taxes or laying off a lot of employees. And recently we've been able to build $50 million of the new capital improvements, a new jail addition, a video visitation / corrections facility, and just broke ground on a $25 million Gull Road Courthouse, all without asking the taxpayers for a millage. So I think we've been pretty good fiscal stewards in Lansing. I'd like to take my knowledge as a small businessman and my knowledge of local government and the knowledge I have of state and national affairs to Lansing to work for the folks in the 63rd District.
Well, you brought up your experience in local government. I'm sure you're aware that there has been at times some friction between local government and state government. How would you see yourself bridging that? And do you think, as someone who has served at the county and township level, that the state should be looking to try and send more revenue sharing dollars to local governments?
Well, we finally did get full revenue sharing back, so that's very good. But I can sort of see the state when they're in trouble, they kind of circle the wagons and try to protect their own budgets. But certainly counties end up counties and townships, local units of government end up relying on the revenue sharing. So to have that taken away from us a few years back was a little bit of a hit. We got to move up our collection time period a bit, so that softened it. But you know, I almost think that, you know, state government ought to be doing the things that state government should be doing, and local and county governments need to rely on their own tax base. Anytime you put your reliance on taxation from another unit of government, another level of government, you're at their mercy. And I'd like to see, I don't know if we need any more revenue sharing. I think we need to keep it at the current levels. But I'm always hesitant to rely on somebody else to furnish me with the revenue I need. I'd like to get it locally if I can through property taxes or what other methods we have, special assessments, things like that.
Should the state then perhaps allow some more options for local governments to raise revenue as they see fit?
Well, I think, you know, options are always a good thing. Mandates, I don't think are, but options are. But sometimes you got to take a look at the overall arching aspect of, you know, there's been some debate as whether we should allow for sales taxes by counties. And I guess maybe that's a debate we should have. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. You'd have to look at, I know border counties sometimes are impacted positively and negatively by the amount of taxes they apply, the different types of taxes they apply with the neighboring states.
But if you are going to say that you'd like to see state government and local government operate more or less independently, you know, shouldn't local governments then have some autonomy to make those decisions? And, you know, the voters of Kalamazoo County, Calhoun County, et cetera, can decide if their county board has acted wisely.
Well, I think that's, you know, something that local control, I think, is a big aspect for me. Folks ought to be able to determine their own fate. I just have to take a look at maybe some of the downsides, and I'm not quite sure what they all might be at this point, but there may be some downsides for allowing options. I know, obviously, there are income tax options. A lot of cities around Kalamazoo, I believe Battle Creek and other units of government have an income tax. Theoretically, that would offset higher property taxes. So that's certainly something to look at. And units of government do have the capability right now of doing that. But obviously, some of them don't want to do that because they look at the fact that if they enact an income tax, then the next business to come in town is going to locate just outside that border. So, but that's their own decision. They do that at their own peril.
The last time you were here in June, before the August primary, we discussed roads in Michigan, and we're pretty much where we were then. There has not been any big action by the legislature on money for road repairs and road maintenance. What do you think the mix should be here? Should it be an increase in the gas tax, vehicle registration fees, toll roads? Should all of that be considered?
I guess we can consider all of it. I'm not a big fan of toll roads. Again, right now, the transportation budget's $1.9 billion. Right off the top comes $400 million. I would like to take a look at that $400 million and see if what we're spending that money on is as important as fixing the potholes on the traveled surface of the road. Other than that, you got $1.5 billion left. About 55% comes from the gas tax, 45% roughly from registration, and 5% from miscellaneous fees. At some point in time, you got to take a look at if we do need $1.2 to $1.5 billion, as the governor said, and you got to get that on an annual basis. I don't think in what we have with the general fund being roughly $10 billion out of a roughly $50 billion total state budget that we're going to find that much waste, fraud, and abuse located in that budget. So at some point in time, you're going to have to look at some sort of an increase, I believe. If we're going to maintain our roads so we don't look like a third world country, we're going to have to do something. And I personally like the fact that the gas tax is a user fee. You pay the tax, you get the benefit, you get to drive on good roads. So if I had my druthers, I'd like to see some sort of a mix between finding the savings we can and what we have currently, reprioritizing what we can find in the budget. But of course, every time you take something from the budget, that's somebody else's priority. So it's a matter of collectively finding the will to reprioritize. But then if there has to be an increase, I'd like to have it somewhat split between a gas tax and a registration fee. You have vehicles out there that don't use gasoline. They still get the benefit of the roads. They should be paying something. So I think some sort of a mix between the two, I think, is inevitable. All you got to do is look at the roads. And I've been driving roads in 20 townships in this district, and I can tell you some of them are really, really in bad shape. So.
What about heavy trucks? There's been some complaints that Michigan is not putting the same fees on those trucks that neighboring Great Lakes states are. And so therefore, heavy trucks are using our roads. They're probably putting more wear and tear on them and not paying as much for that as they would in Indiana or Ohio.
Well, I think it's certainly something we need to take a look at. If we are allowing vehicles that no other state allows, and weights that no other state allows, there's got to be some reasoning. I'd like to find out the reasoning why those states restrict those weights or have additional costs for trucks running those weights, and why Michigan doesn't. So I think I'd like to at least take a look at both sides. Always like to take a look at both sides of the issue and say, why are they allowing this? Why aren't we? And hopefully we got a really, really excellent case for it. Otherwise, why are all these other states, you know, putting these restrictions on? I know that's the kind of a debate with a double axle, triple axle vehicle is the same thing. Well, they spread the weight out per axle, but you still got that much more weight, especially on the bridges. So I certainly think it's something that you have to take a look at. If those types of vehicles are tearing up our roads more than what they're contributing, then maybe we need to take a look at how much they're paying or restrict the type of vehicles they can have.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans speaking with Dave Maturin. He's the Republican nominee for State House in Michigan's 63rd District. That includes parts of both Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. He's also currently the chairman of the Kalamazoo County Commission. When it comes to energy, how much should the state be trying to encourage or boost more energy produced by renewable sources?
Well, I think that getting energy from all forms, I think, is important to our state. I know there's a fair amount of development right now with wind energy, which is certainly a renewable source. One of the problems with the wind energy issue is that generally the wind's blowing where the majority of the people aren't and the majority of the industries aren't, such as up in the Thumb and along the lakeshore. So then the problem is, okay, now you've got to get transmission lines then to bring that energy back to where the people are. And there's always a debate over the whole issue of transmission lines and their impact on value and that kind of stuff. But I think we should be looking into all forms of energy, solar. We're basically on the same parallel in the world with Germany, and I think Germany has more solar power. You would think it would be some sunny place out in the desert somewhere along the equator, but Germany has a tremendous amount of solar energy, and if they can do it, we certainly should be able to do it. And you know, I think the costs are coming down, at least from the solar aspect. I'm not sure about the wind turbine generators, if the cost is coming down on those. And I know there's also some federal tax incentives and things like that that may or may not be a stable. I know they lose them, then they wait around for a few months and they get them again, but it's always on an annual basis. But I think we need to take a look at that, certainly. I also think we need to take a look at, as much as people don't seem to favor it, I think nuclear. To me, you know, nuclear is certainly no greenhouse gases from it. And even though it seems to be very difficult to permit that type of an energy form, I think it's certainly something we need to take a look at too.
What about the cost of nuclear? That's one of the drawbacks people cite, is that building a nuclear power plant is very expensive, and then you've got to keep it running for decades if you're going to get your cost back.
Well, yeah, that's true, but you look at the offsetting impact on the environment, and there's very little impact on the environment. That's assuming that we can take care of the nuclear waste. And perhaps someday we'll take a look at all the billions we spent on Yucca Mountain and decide that really is a place to put these casks. I guess that's up to the energy industry. I know they want to have customers too. So if you build something like that, you're going to have to be guaranteed you're going to have some customers to make those payments. I don't know if it's any more costly to build a nuclear plant than it would be to try to build a clean coal plant today. And certainly the amount of renewable energy we have is such a small amount of what our energy needs are that I think, I don't know, you know, how many hundreds of acres or thousands, tens of thousands of acres of solar, of voltaic cells you'd have to have, and or wind turbine generators. I think you could probably cover the whole state and you still wouldn't get anywhere near. So we're always going to have some sort of a constant ready source of energy. When the wind doesn't blow on the hottest day in August and you turn your air conditioning on, those wind turbines aren't blowing at all. So you always have to have backup power anyway in one shape or form. So, you know, encourage as much as you can from a renewable aspect, but you still need to have ready, reliable power, be it coal, be it nuclear, whatever, for those days when the wind's not blowing and the sun's not shining.
Speaking of waste, the state has taken on a review of the standards for landfills, based on the fact that a Pennsylvania company was going to ship some low-level radioactive fracking waste to Michigan. That caused some concerns. What sort of standards would you want to put on Michigan landfills in terms of the waste they can accept from out of state or even from within the state?
Well, I'd like to look at it from a scientific aspect, and hopefully our DNR, DEQ, could do the kind of research necessary to make sure that our groundwater wouldn't be impacted. That our soils wouldn't be impacted, and I guess I would trust their judgment as to whether that's an appropriate use for the land in Michigan or not. I know that we in Michigan do export some of our waste to other, I think we actually export some to Canada, if I'm not mistaken, and other states. So I think it's more of a national issue, and I think they've also labeled that as interstate commerce waste, so it comes under the Interstate Commerce Clause and federal issues. But we certainly need to make sure that our groundwater is protected. We don't want to be taking something even from inside Michigan, let alone outside Michigan, to be putting into potentially a harmful aspect for drinking water.
What about fracking in general? Do you think the state should have stricter regulations on hydraulic fracturing for natural gas?
Well, I think we've been, from what I understand, we've been doing fracking in one sort or another here for decades without any deleterious impact on the environment. I'm not sure what their rules are right now. I think the state, I assume the state DNR DEQ has rules on what they can do as far as fracking and the impact on the environment. But I guess whatever they need to do to guarantee that, folks' drinking water isn't going to be affected, I think that's important. My understanding is that the fluids that are done with fracking are injected well below where anybody's well water is. But it's certainly incumbent upon the industry before they start doing this kind of an activity. I would, if I were in the industry, make sure that I've got some baseline standard before I start to know what well samples are. So if something does happen, you can't certainly necessarily blame it on the fracking. Maybe it was there all before to begin with.
Education. Do you support Michigan being part of the Common Core standards for education?
That seems to be a pretty controversial issue. I really never heard about Common Core until we started this campaign, and then I ran into some folks who were really concerned about a quote-unquote federal takeover of education. I tried to do some reading in the little bit of time that I do have to set aside to read some of the issues. But I look at some of the folks that are proponents of Common Core, and these folks aren't, you know, folks, these are folks that have been involved in the issue, in education, been involved in their conservative individuals, Dick DeVos, John Engler, and I read an article the other day from Bill Bennett. You know, Bill Bennett worked in the White House. I think he might have been Secretary of Education, if not Health and Human Services. He wrote an article in the Wall Street Journal indicating that, you know, we need this kind of a standard. It's a global economy. We want to make sure that kids, that if they get an education in one state and move to another state, that they have those basic standards that they can progress along. So, you know, whether it's Common Core, or maybe we need to call it something else, but whether it's Common Core or something else, we certainly need a set of standards. We need to measure this stuff. I don't think it's as deleterious as some people think. I don't think it's a federal takeover. There was federal money involved, though, to encourage states to adopt it. But it's my understanding that came out of the National Governors Association. It's a state-oriented issue. And so I personally think that if those folks that I think are pretty knowledgeable about this issue think it's a good idea for us to have, then at this point I'm in favor of carrying on with the Common Core standards that we have. One of the problems was measuring it, because right now we're trying to measure the Common Core with the MEEP test, a state-oriented test. And so I think that's maybe part of the problem. I think the legislature kind of got a little bit aside during the last session and decided to not adopt a smarter, balanced measuring process, but instead said, well, go give us some sort of a new MEEP exam that's maybe slanted a bit towards measuring Common Core. Again, I haven't been involved in the total discussion about that, but that seemed to kind of take it off in a tangent that may not be all that productive. But I think if those folks think it's a good thing, I trust their judgment. I don't see a problem with it at this point, but I'm sure there'll be more discussion.
Can the state do more to improve its oversight over charter schools? The Detroit Free Press had a series earlier this summer about some of the problems of accountability, money spent, those sort of things. Can the state examine that better?
I don't know if they need to examine it better. I read a little bit of the Free Press investigation. I guess, you know, I think all schools should be held to the same standards, and they should be held to the same educational standards as public schools, as other private schools should be held to. So I don't know if we need to hold them to a different standard. I just think they all ought to be held to the same standard. And I think some of the concern with the FREEP investigation was more of an issue of who owns the buildings and what's the rent and what's the business arrangement, more than the educational outcome of it.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans speaking with Dave Maturin. He is the Republican nominee for State House in Michigan's 63rd District. That includes parts of Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. He's currently the chairman of the Kalamazoo County Commission. Last time you were here, you talked a little bit about right to work. Let's just get into that a little bit more. Why do you think that this is, in the long run, the best move for Michigan?
Well, I think until we eliminated the right to work aspect of Michigan's rules, I think there was almost a sticker on the door when folks were looking at site selection for us, and I think that made a lot of companies not even bother to look at what Michigan has to offer. And I think it's something that we haven't seen the immediate impact of it. People haven't been rushing across the border, but I think it takes off the stop sign for potential employers and says, okay, maybe we should take a look at what else Michigan has to offer. So I think it's a positive long-term thing for Michigan, for employers that want to come in and not have to work in as strong a union environment as we have. I mean, those are the people that are going to bring in the jobs. And if they think that that's an impediment, they're not even going to look at Michigan. So I think it's something that's one more positive, along with the revision on our personal property tax. I think that's another thing. Again, we're taking more barriers off of the entry door to looking at Michigan. And I think everything we can do from that aspect is going to be a positive aspect.
Well, when do we look ahead and say we're going to see some results that you know, we can really can say pretty assuredly this is related to the fact that Michigan's a right-to-work state?
How many years is it going to take? I don't know how many years it's going to take. I mean, it just part of it depends on the economy. But it, I guess from my viewpoint, I think it's a positive aspect for the state not to have to deal with that. To have a right-to-work law, I think is something that a lot of employers are going to look at and say, okay, there's one more thing that is in Michigan's favor. We've had a long history in the state of unionization. Some of it I think was certainly necessary. Some of the things have gone too far, and I think a lot of employers just say, forget it. We're going to look at other states. You look at where a lot of the new auto manufacturing facilities are going in. Those are still good paying jobs, and they're going into Tennessee and Mississippi and Alabama and places like that that are right to work states. And I think it's something that's positive for our state. It's going to make folks look twice at coming to our state to invest and create jobs. And I think that's one of the key issues. Again, being able to offer good paying jobs in the state, and that's one of the issues I think is going to help us.
Michigan privatized the food service in state prisons, and there have been a series of problems that have followed from that. If you were in the state legislature and there's a proposal before you to privatize some service in prisons, schools, et cetera, what would be the things that you would want to see? What would be sort of the litmus test for you to say, yeah, okay, we can okay that one, or perhaps, no, that's one we're not going to follow through on?
Well, I think privatization is something that works well if you have good performance standards and measurements. It's just like putting together a contract. If you don't put a contract together well, then you may not get what you thought you were going to get out of it. I know a lot of school districts have privatized cafeteria workers and bus service. They wanted to focus on their core function. And what's the core function of a prison? Is the core function of a prison feeding people, or is it acting as a jailer / corrections facility? And I think you need to put your state efforts and the bulk of the money where your core function is, and serving food isn't one. Now, they've had some problems, certainly. Have they ever had any problems with normal employees? I bet they probably have some of the same type of problems with the non-privatized employees. It just doesn't get the heightened notoriety that it does when something like this occurs. But I don't see a problem with privatizing a lot of functions. But again, you got to have good performance standards, and you got to have good management, and you got to have somebody making sure that those standards are adhered to. So not a problem with the aspect, but it's just not something you can't just say, well, let's just privatize it and then walk away from it. You still have to, as a manager, make sure you got some controls over that.
Well, if there's a situation like Aramark where there's been problems with the food safety, with some of the workers getting, let's put this delicately, getting too friendly with inmates, I mean, what's the point where patience runs out if you have any say in it, where you say, well, we may privatize it, but it's not going to be with this company. Let's cancel the contract, look for a new one.
Right. Well, you certainly do that. And that's the option. If it doesn't work out, if you're not getting the service that you called for with one company, then there should be somebody else in the private sector that's willing to step in and also bid on that service. And you want to, they're obviously aware of what occurred in the past. But you got that option of doing that. So I don't see an issue with it. Because one company doesn't perform well doesn't demonize the whole aspect of privatization. Again, you've got to write some good standards into place. And if Aramark's not doing it for whatever reason, and I'm not privy to all of the discussion, and a lot of the things you hear about if you're talking about some other issues besides food service and their relationship with some of the inmates, I guess I'd like to know a little bit more about that. What was it? When you just talk in general about these things, your mind can go to the worst thing or the least worst thing. So I'm not sure what all those activities were, but obviously the company's got some problems with their personnel, and they need to clean up the act, or they're not going to hold a contract anymore. I mean, there's certainly an incentive for, in this case, Aramark, to make every effort to hire the kind of people they need to hire, you know, to do the job they're hired to. And I would hope that their hiring standards are sufficient, or guess what? They won't be in business anymore. And hopefully somebody else that comes along the next time will learn from that. And again, use the kind of, get the kind of skill set the employees they need to do the right job and not be hiring people that are doing stuff other than what they should be doing. So, I mean, this is something in the private sector where you don't perform, you're out of here. You lose the business. You lose the contract. You may lose your entire business, depending upon, you know, what type of issues you had under that current contract. So, whereas if it's the continued employees, I was just reading something in the journal the other day about how difficult it is to fire some employees for grievous acts of, you know, one instance, swearing at the manager in front of a bunch of customers in a restaurant. Now, apparently the manager thought that was well worth firing these folks, but the NLRB thought it wasn't. That was just something that was just acceptable. Well, I don't think some of these things are acceptable. And so are there downsides with you know, having non-privatized employees work for you? Yeah. So I think it's human nature. You're going to get people, whether you privatize it or not, are going to be doing certain things. But at least the company, in this case the state of Michigan, has the option of simply canceling that contract or taking whatever actions they need to.
As I noted at the top, this office is becoming open this year because Jace Bulger can't run again because of Michigan's term limits law. Do you think that Michigan has it right with term limits, or would you want to see changes to the law? Do you think we need term limits at all?
I think term limits are here to stay, regardless of what I think about them. I do think that we should take a look at, and this isn't self-serving on my part, because if I happen to win this election, my whole intent is to be here for three terms, if possible, and that's it. There's nothing further for me in the political realm. But I think 6 years may be a little bit too short a period for folks to gain expertise. And I say that having worked for state government, it takes quite a long time to get enough expertise as a legislator to the point where you're not necessarily beholden to what you either hear from administration / bureaucracy or your reliance on lobbyists. I think at this point, you know, there may be a little bit too much power given to the administration / bureaucracy and the folks that do the advocating for various interests in Lansing. I like to at least have a legislator who's got some innate knowledge of whatever topic it might be it appropriations, the budget, or specific issues with whatever committee they're on. So 6 years probably is not enough time to gain that kind of expertise. I think term limits are probably still appropriate, but I think a lengthened time period, and whether you require it all in one house, the House or the Senate, I think a little bit more time would be appropriate. I don't say that it's self-serving for me, but I think in concept it's fine. One of the big issues and why they tried it with Congress, and Congress, of course, rejected it because the Constitution has very limited requirements for it. Once you change a committee chair, though, you change a lot of things. And, you know, previously we would have committee chairs here that would be there forever, and they would basically control everything. And that, to me, isn't good, but rotating committee chairs, limiting the amount of time you can have as a committee chair, I think, is an appropriate thing.
Which is what the House Republican rules
exactly
are.
Right. And they got, I mean, the House Republicans have said 6 years. So, for instance, Fred Upton's will be in his last 2-year term as chairman of House Energy and Commerce. Then somebody else comes in new. So you don't get to have a fiefdom. And I don't want to pick on Dominic Jacobetti, but, I mean, for years and years, Dominic Jacobetti was the chair of House Appropriations. And that's why the UP got lots of stuff up there, lots of stuff with his name on it, simply because maybe a little bit of an abuse of that position, you know, given the situation we had. But I think term limits are good. I think we need to extend them a bit. I'm not sure how many years, but I think I'd like my legislator to have a little more expertise in areas so he's not so reliant on other folks to give him the information.
What do you think about a part-time legislature?
I think that our state government probably is big enough and complex enough that having a quote-unquote full-time legislature, I think it works. Other states have part-time legislatures, and I guess it depends from the voters' aspect. How much power do you want to give to administration? How much power do you want to give to the governor? If you think it's fine putting most of the power in the governor's hands or the bureaucracy's hands, that's a decision that the voters would have to make. Or do you trust your legislators to have more power? I know some of these part-time states are occupied by folks who essentially have pay from other industries. You either have pay from an industry and they lend you to that position, or you're on a union payroll and you get kind of lent to that position. So I'm not sure how respective of the broad aspect of the citizenry you get with a part-time legislature. I just think things are complex enough in Michigan that a full-time legislature is probably appropriate. And if folks aren't doing their job, there's always the time to vote them out the next time. So,
Dave Maturin, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Dave Maturin is the chairman of the Kalamazoo County Commission. He's also the Republican nominee in Michigan's 63rd State House District, which includes parts of Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.